Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter as SF in Color.
And today we are not talking about Steven Universe, sorry.
Because we are liars.
I wouldn't say lied, I changed my mind. And I did say at the end of that episode that we might do Steven Universe, so that's not really a lie. We are not doing Steven Universe this episode, we are doing, instead, Star Trek Discovery. Because I'm like the worst Star Trek fan ever, I totally forgot that it was coming out last time when we recorded. And then I belatedly realized, oh hey, didn't Star Trek Discovery just come out? Even though I just watched the trailer and was like, oh, this is so exciting. I totally forgot about the release date. So, I decided to do, or not, I didn't decide. I asked Melissa, can we do Star Trek Discovery?
And I obliged.
She acquiesced. AKA, welcome to SAT vocabulary words. Sorry, let me turn off. I have my clock turned on to scream at me when it turns like a certain hour. And it's really distracting. So let me take that off. Okay, so yeah, we're going to be doing the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery, which is, I think the first one is called The Vulcan Hello, and the second one I think is called The Binary...
Vulcan Goodbye?
Oh.
Sorry.
No, it's a Vulcan... Are you making a stupid joke?
Yeah. Okay. Just ignore me. Continue.
I was like, are you trying... I honestly thought you thought it was goodbye. So the first episode, or the first part of it, it's more like a two-parter, is The Vulcan Hello, and the second part is...
The Vulcan
Battle
Goodbye.
At the Binary Stars. Even though I don't remember there being two stars, but whatever. Battle at the Binary Stars.
I think they made some vague reference to that they were in a binary system. I think that was it.
Oh, okay.
It literally didn't matter at all.
It didn't. I didn't really register visually, but sure. So, if you've listened to previous episodes, you know that I am a big fan of Star Trek. So, in the interest of keeping this slightly non-biased, at least to start off with, Melissa, who is not as big of a Star Trek fan, what did you think of these two episodes?
Oof. I don't even know where to begin. I really don't know.
Huh, okay.
I don't know if I liked it or not.
Okay, what are some points that you, I don't know, feel mixed about or don't like?
I feel mixed about everything. I think that's the problem.
Really?
I don't...
Okay.
Okay, so like...
Huh.
I don't feel strongly attached to any of the characters.
Okay.
And... Okay, let me explain it this way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This, you know, hour and a half, two-parter, felt like the 15 minutes or the 10 minutes at the beginning of a film where they tell you everything that's going on, but really doesn't matter that much.
I mean, it's a backstory section for sure.
Right. And you're basically just watching it to get through it, to realize why you actually care about the characters.
Mm.
And it just felt like really long backstory.
Okay.
It felt just not... Like, I just kept waiting for, like, it to happen. I didn't know what, but I kept waiting for it to happen.
Okay. Interesting. This is where I could see my Trek bias creeping in, seeing how, like, my reaction versus your reaction, which I will get to in a bit.
It's funny, because I haven't really read anything on the internet about what people thought about it, so I don't really know where I stand.
I kind of forgot that it was coming out, because I'm a horrible Trekkie, and I'm a horrible Trekkie because, actually, if I was a real Trekkie, I'd be a Trekker, but semantics. Mm-hmm. So I haven't read any articles about, like, how people thought the actual episodes were. I think my eye might have, like, glanced at some side headlines on websites about how people liked it or whatever, but other than that, I haven't really read, like, reviews of it because I wanted to remain unspoiled. I think before it was released, people were kind of comparing some of the screenshots to The Force Awakens, I think. Because,
yeah,
like, you know,
I
those two were
that.
In the desert at the beginning. And I know... There was also another article that I think I read. I might have skimmed it, but I think it was something saying that, like, Star Trek Discovery doesn't know what it wants to be. Like, does it want to please the loyal fans? Does it want to drag in new fans? It doesn't really know. It's kind of confusing.
There wasn't a dragon.
Mixed.
I'm sorry, that was a terrible joke.
What is with you and the puns today, man? Anyway.
I'm just on my game.
Are you? Okay, so...
You know,
I've heard
I actually completely
things.
Agree, though.
that it doesn't know what it wants to be.
I was thinking the same thing as I was watching it, because I didn't really think it had a good identity.
Yeah, I think I could see, I could definitely see that. I definitely see how it's trying to pander to fans who might know the lore a bit more. And again, I'm not, I really am not the biggest Trekkie. Like, I mainly know the new trilogy of films that came out, and I know, I don't know, some, I know a good chunk of the original series and, like, bits and pieces of The Next Generation. Beyond that, I don't really know that much more about the
series. So you're saying you can't speak Klingon?
I cannot speak Klingon. And I, get but, off of the podcast. But I do know enough about Klingon. Listen, I do know enough about Klingons that I can make a lot of interesting, I can talk about them quite a bit in this episode. So, yeah, I can, I guess I can see, if I step back and try to, like, remove the rose-tinted glasses, I can be like, oh, I can kind of see why you're feeling kind of iffy about it. So,
but what did you think? What's your literal opinion?
Okay, I think I liked it, but I know that I was predisposed to like it because I am a Trek fan, and okay. I'm used to how the TV series works, and, like, there's a lot of, like, background stuff that was like, oh, this is, like, that's what this is. Like, remember how, so if you listen to our Star Wars, The Force Awakens, I think we, was that in two parts? I wasn't sure if that was a two-parter.
I don't remember.
I think it was.
With many moons.
Oh, no, it was definitely a two-parter. If you listen to that two-parter, and especially, specifically the last, the second episode that we discuss, The Force Awakens, I heavily criticize the ending scene where there's a nice helicopter shot that, like, rotates around Luke Skywalker, because I thought that was over the top too much. But you just ate that up, Melissa. You were loving that.
I was.
And so, like, it's kind of, like, in that same way, like, I can see the parts in this, in these two episodes that are, like, Trek fans will eat that up. Like, helicopter Luke Skywalker scene. Like, for like 10 that minutes. To me, but like to you, you're just like, you're not even, this is too much. You're just like, you don't even, like, you as a not as involved in the Trek fandom, like, you don't even know what it is or why it's important or whatever. If that makes sense?
Yeah.
That you know, does. Like Easter eggs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on.
Oh, just for what this show is supposed to do for me. Mm-hmm, obviously, mm-hmm. I don't know how it suited the fans or the longtime fans, but for what it was due for me, you know, who's just a very casual fan,
right?
You've seen a couple of the Star Trek draw me in.
Films, yeah.
I kept waiting for the hook.
Okay.
And I think the hook finally came
at the end,
at the last minute of the second episode.
Yeah,
which was the hook I was waiting for. I was waiting for everything to like begin. I was waiting for the real story to start, If I don't know if I would have made it to that point if I wasn't podcasting.
I see. Right, you would have just been like, you watch the first episode, you're like, I'm good, I'm done. Like, it's over.
Yeah, I mean, I used to give things a lot more of a chance than I do now, I think. My tolerance has gone a lot. It's gone down. I actually was watching something yesterday, and it was the same kind of thing. I won't name it, but I was waiting and waiting for the hook, and I was like 25 minutes into a movie, and I was waiting for the hook, and I was like, there's no hook coming, is there? And then I just turned it off.
See, I think this is the reason why, well, first of all, I think it has a hard job because, sorry, there's a weird optical illusion happening in this room, and it's like really distracting. I don't know. Oh, I know what it is. It's not an optical illusion. Okay, I know what it is. I'm gonna stop looking at it now. Sorry, this is what happens when you record in a closet instead of your normal recording space. Okay,
let me get back on track. You have a soundproof chamber to record now.
Well, now there won't be crazy sound effects in the background like last time. Okay, so to get back on track. Sorry, that's so distracting. Okay, we were talking about, so you were saying that you were waiting for the hook to happen, and you felt like you were waiting a really long time, and finally it happened, and you weren't sure if you were going to get there if we weren't podcasting. So, right. I guess for me, this is the reason why they never really introduced the Klingons in the film series, or at least the newer films, because, and I also think
they're silly.
The reason why that's, well, they're silly, but also, Like, they... This is like... Oh, no. Curses. That's because my sister is above me. I don't know what she dropped. I hope it was something important.
Petty. You're a good sister.
I'm a great sister. So... I have to stop looking in that corner. Oh, my gosh. It's so distracting. I think there's a reason why they didn't use Klingons in the film series. One, because you said they're a little bit silly, but not really. To me, I think it's more the fact that, at least in this series, right, they're going to turn this conflict with the Klingons into their arc, and that's why they're trying so hard to set it all up right now, which is why it's kind of slow. Yeah. Not saying that, I mean, and that's why the thing about Star Trek versus Star Wars, or, like, just Star Trek versus other sci-fi in general, is Star Trek, it's a slow-paced show, man. That's just, like, how it works. The pacing is very slow. People always complain that, like, Trek isn't as action-packed. It's more, I guess, like, stereotypically more cerebral than, like, mm-hmm. other sci-fi. And that's because it's kind of true. Like, it moves slow, and it's more about thinking about social issues and blah, blah, blah. So, like, I guess the reason why I wasn't too turned off by it was because, like, I'm kind of used to it. Because mm-hmm. that's just how Trek operates. Like, they don't really... I personally thought it was fairly action-packed, especially towards the second half. Mm-hmm. But, again, I have a lot of bias because I'm very, like, yay, I love Star Trek, so...
Well, let me say this. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of things exploded. There was a lot of action physically. Mm-hmm. But I didn't care.
Okay.
That was the problem. And I don't mean that I need a lot of action to keep me going. Because, like, for example, I loved the show Community. And that had very little action. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I genuinely want to care about characters and their interactions with each other.
Okay.
And I basically just kept waiting for the other shoe to drop in most of the interactions.
How I felt about...
Because I was just waiting for her to die.
The captain?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we all knew the captain was going to die. Especially once you see guest starring, you're like, oh, they're not coming back.
I didn't even notice that.
I saw guest starring, and I knew she was going to... I knew she was a goner.
Like, I didn't even see... I knew she was just... You know, she's the character that dies. She's the captain. You knew she was going to.
You gotta kill the captain. So, it's like...
But
the
I father kept waiting
must,
for it.
Instead of the father must die, it's the captain must die this time.
The father figure must die.
Yeah. The Sarek didn't die. But that's because Sarek could be used for more interesting stuff later down the line.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Sarek didn't die. And also, if Sarek died... Well, I don't know in this timeline... Oh, so, do you know who Sarek is?
No.
See, like, you'd have no idea. Sarek is Spock's dad.
I was actually going to guess that, but then I thought I was being racist against Spock.
No. So, Sarek actually is Spock's dad.
You're not my real dad.
I mean, he isn't. I think, so for me, again, this is coming from someone who's, like, maybe not super, super into the fandom, but, like, has at least a decent understanding of the fandom and stuff. I think when you're saying that you weren't as invested in the characters, I think for me, I went in, and from, like, pretty much the beginning, or at least once they got onto the bridge and started talking to other people in the bridge, I was like, oh, I know who everyone's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's-her-face, Michael, is supposed to be the Spock.
Well, yeah, I figured that one out myself.
And, like, I'm not saying that Saru is, like, the McCoy, but, like, they all have their roles to play in the ensemble. That's just how Trek is. So, like, in my head, I already kind of... I know how the play goes. So, like, like, it's, you know, so it was kind of that sort of thing. And, like, again, like, I think... As a Trek fan, when you're watching this stuff, you're thinking back to lore from the past, and that's filling in the emotional gaps that are present for people who don't know the lore. So, like,
I know that
Sarek is Spock's dad, therefore I know I already like Sarek, so I already like Sarek, and I've already invested in him, and mm-hmm. that kind of a thing, right? And I already know the Klingons are evil analogs for the Soviet Union or whatever, so I'm like, oh, okay. And I guess in this, I don't know if they were trying to go for, like, the ISIS angle in this one, but I was like, okay, you're, like, the,
oh,
you know,
I didn't,
like,
get that at all.
The, well, with the, hold, I don't know, I don't know if
I got, I took it a different way.
Interesting, okay. But I don't know, I thought they were, they might be trying to go for some kind of weird ISIS, like, extremism, religious extremism angle with the Klingons this time around. But I was like, well, I know who the Klingons are, even though I don't know how to speak Klingon. I know they are, you know, they're the baddies, the classic baddies of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
Even though they've been pretty much, like, cut out. They're not cut out, but they don't play a prominent role in the films.
They're Klingoffs.
Oh, my God. Anyway, they're not as prominent in the film series because it's too much lore. It's too lore-heavy, you know? I like how you're trying to stifle your laughter.
I'm still laughing at my know. Awful joke.
Anyway. Yeah. Klingons, I mean, you gotta have Klingons, man. You gotta have Klingons. It's not Star Trek without Klingons. Which is, admittedly, why people really don't... Some hardcore fans really don't like the movies, but... The new movies, but...
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the main thing, is, like, I know the lore, so that helps me fill in the emotional gaps that are present for you. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
There are also a lot more aliens. Which is not on topic, but I was just thinking about
it. In Trek or in Star Wars?
No, in Trek compared to, like, the recent movies.
Okay, like, so there's more aliens in the two crew, episodes.
And just, like, it seems to be, like, important characters, main characters.
Yeah, I feel like in the universe of Star Trek, that we care more... Not we care... Okay, let me try to figure out how to phrase this. It feels like aliens and, like, types of aliens and subgroups of aliens are not... doesn't really matter in Star Wars that much. Like, I don't know what species Greedo is. Like, I don't know. Does it matter?
Well, maybe really. That is because you're not a hardcore fan.
Well, but I mean, like, there's no... What? Okay, fine. What species?
I have a 300-page encyclopedia to prove you wrong.
Tell me.
What?
What species is Greedo?
If you had asked me in middle school, I could tell you.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not part of that's not something that you need to know as a fan of the movie. Like, it's not important, right? But for in Trek, the other people, the other species that they mention, like. The Vulcans, the Andorians, I think the Tellarites. I never seen a Tellarite, so, they're, not existing in my head. But
that's Tellarong.
I hate you so much. You just do this in a Trek episode, isn't it? But the Andorians, they have a whole culture that is explored in the series and stuff. Mm-hmm. And same for the Vulcans, the whole different species of aliens... is much more, I don't know if important's the right word, but, it's more important to the story. it doesn't really matter.
More integrated.
Sure, yeah. There will be episodes where, we explore, I don't know, Andorians or... I was going to call them Kardashians. The Cardassians. There's a great t-shirt out there. I have to go find it and link to it. But there's a great t-shirt out there. It's keeping up with the Cardassians. And it's just the Kardashian family. But their faces are changed to look more like Cardassians or something.
That's the nerdiest thing I've ever
heard. I know. It's great though. The Borg is a huge thing with TNG.
But even so.
Yeah.
And I don't know about The Next Generation. I only know, vague things about the original. And I know the recent movies, except for the second one, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That one's been disavowed.
I've disavowed it. I don't think everyone else has. But I've disavowed into...
Well,
into...
I never saw it. So I spiritually disavowed it.
Okay.
Just go with me here. Okay.
Yeah.
The human characters, excluding Spock,
are
the main cast. There are aliens around the periphery that rotate.
Yeah, things definitely change, I think, in later... Well...
Obviously, there,
debatable,
there are
actually,
some...
Yeah. Debatable.
There are legitimate reasons for this, because humans are a lot cheaper than aliens.
Yeah, this definitely changes because, and again, I haven't watched a lot of TNG, but Worf is a Klingon and he's a main character in the TNG ensemble. Data is an android, so I don't know if he counts. He's like the Spock, basically.
If it looks like a human, it doesn't count.
Fair enough.
Because it's just a person.
Well, to be fair, I think most of the Star Trek aliens look like humans, but, you know.
I'm thinking more like face covering.
That's basically, listen, you know who started that with started the whole human except for the face? That's like totally Star Trek right there. If you want a Star Trek alien, all you do is take a person and you, like, put a couple things on their face and then suddenly they're an alien. Like, that's Star Trek right there for you.
It's called budget.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, definitely, yeah, it skews human, obviously, because lots of different reasons. But well, one other thing, too, one other reason, too, and I think I'm paraphrasing a character from the original series, but basically, I think one of the biggest reasons is, in the world of Star Trek, different alien species are basically stereotypes for human emotions. So, the thing about humans is that they don't fit one emotional they're everything.
Right.
Like, I can't remember what character said that, but definitely a character was like, oh yeah, you humans, like, you're so unpredictable, and we don't know what's going on with you guys. At least if you know if you're dealing with a Vulcan, you're dealing with a logical person. If you're dealing with, I don't know, Ferengi, they're, like, greedy. And if you're dealing with Andorian, you know, they're emotional. Stuff like that. But, like, humans, you never know what you're gonna get. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of why they're, like, the centerpiece, because you don't know.
But I mean,
for
many reasons. I don't really like the aliens.
Because they're too, like, stereotypically, like,
they're
one
still,
thing.
They're one-dimensional.
Yeah.
They feel too other.
Hmm.
Like, it's us and them.
Right. Which is what... I don't know. I want to talk about this later, but I think Star Trek is interesting when... I think this, this episode is interesting, at least the first one is interesting to me, because they kind of start exploring, like, the contradictions of Star Trek. Like, to quote 2009, peacekeeping armada. What? That is a contradiction. Yeah. How are you a peacekeeping... An armada is inherently militaristic and antagonistic, but you're a peacekeeping armada. Like, that doesn't jive. Which is why I really enjoyed when they talked about it, when that random ensign, I can't speak words, when that random ensign just talks to Michael, and he's like, we're supposed to be explorers. And I'm like, bruh, like, you have a military structure. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Like, this isn't a great shock.
Yeah, but again, he was a little bit date. So, anyway.
No, but I agree. And I totally had a point, and I'd just forgotten it.
I'm sure we'll get back to it. But I don't know.
Pain now.
I don't want this podcast to go very long, but I have a feeling it will because it's me, and I talk a lot, and it's Star Trek.
And there's two episodes.
It's a lot of stuff going on, and I don't want to do a two-parter, because you haven't done a two-parter in, like, who knows how long, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Okay. One-parter it is.
One-parter it is, if possible. So, I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot, but I think I enjoyed it a lot because of those reasons I talked about before. Like, I know the lore enough to enjoy the gaps that were left. I was pretty invested in Michael. I don't know. Did you watch the little end part where it's like next, like coming up at the rest of the season?
I watched the beginning of it and then it cut off for me.
Okay. I watched that whole thing and it seems like interesting things are happening. I wonder how interesting it will... I don't know how I feel about the Klingon arc. Like, I don't know how interesting that's going to be in the long run. I think it worked for me this episode, but I don't know if it can sustain, like, its interestingness. I do think we're going to get some more funny episodes, just because I looked through the cast list, and I was like, oh, it's that character from the original series. And, oh, he's being played by this dude. Let me read it out to you. So, do you know Rainn Wilson?
No.
Have you ever watched The Office? Do you know anything about The Office? You ever seen any, like, clips?
Yes,
so you
I've
know,
seen
like, the
clips.
Crazy character with, like, the glasses, and his name is Dwight Schrute, and he, like, is paranoid and insane. Like, it's that
I'm not
actor.
Complete pop culture fool.
Right. Anyway, so that's, so Rainn Wilson plays Dwight Schrute in The Office, And he's going to be playing, I think, Harry Mudd, who is, he's in a bunch of classic Star Trek episodes. He plays a con man, like a fat, jolly con man who's like, ha ha ha, everything's hilarious. And everyone's like, you're an idiot. But anyway, he's in the more lighthearted episodes, so I don't think it's all going to be like doom, gloom, dark, edgy, let's kill Klingon. Like, it's not going to be all dark if he's in it, I don't think. Oh, he's from, he was born in Seattle, Washington. That's random. Okay. So, sorry, getting back on topic. I guess. I don't think it'll be all doom and gloom. I don't know how I feel about the Klingons being the major arc of the season. This is a 15-episode show, so I don't know. I don't really
have any opinions about Klingons, honestly. That said, like, it feels like Michael has enough character to sustain that amount of arc. But we just, I want to see more of it.
You want, like, to see more of Michael, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not just, like, screen time, because, like, we got a lot of that.
Sure.
But I still don't feel like,
who she is, we don't know who she is as a person.
Yeah. I mean, we got some of her background and whatever, but
I feel that.
I still don't, I mean, obviously it's only two episodes, so, I mean, I understand this, but.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I can describe her personality at all.
I feel like crazy motivated, like, has a lot of drive and ambition.
Okay.
I feel like I can get that from this episode.
She's without driven.
Rich reaching for too much. Clearly intelligent, because, like, she was, like, what, the first human to go through all that Vulcan schooling, and, like, she didn't totally give up on that. I mean, she's a competent person.
Yeah, she's definitely but competent.
Clearly her emotions, like, these two episodes just showed how every emotional decision she made just, like, backfired spectacularly. Like, so, I don't know. It's interesting, though. I feel like it's more interesting than having, like, a perfect character, you know, or, like a Sue or something. Because, like,
yeah, definitely.
God knows if this was written, like, and she was more of a Mary Sue, like, she wouldn't be in jail. You know, like, that would not be a thing. But I see what you mean. Like, it's just, it's early days. It's, like, hard to say, like, who she is.
Yeah.
This is where Trek, when it shines through, is when you learn more about the characters through their interactions with, like, other main cast members on ensemble members. I don't know if we're gonna get, just based off this alone, I don't know if we're gonna get a main ensemble. I hope we do, but, you know, it just feels like
the only people eventually. We have
are her, and I think based on the, you know, coming next or whatever, coming up this season, like, Saru is gonna be there, but, like, I don't know who else.
Saru is gonna be there too.
Anyway,
I read one article before we started. Okay. And it was all about how Saru is extremely divisive.
I kind of like him, but I could kind of see why he would get a lot of flack.
The Jar Jar Binks.
I wouldn't call him. I don't think he's Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar is freaking ugly, yo. Like, oh my gosh. Sorry. Before we get into,
but Saru is a real looker.
So what?
He's a real looker.
I think his design's interesting, honestly. It's better than most of the let's throw stuff on a human face alien designs I've seen.
This is not a mask.
Wait, let's go through, I want to go through, like, some of the cast members and what they've been in. So, playing Michael Burnham is, I'm hoping I pronounce this right, Sonequa Martin-Green. So this is, like, I guess one of her first major big roles, although she was in The Walking Dead in the past. Michelle Yeoh.
I didn't recognize her at all, which is, I like that.
But you haven't watched The Walking Dead, right?
Which is why I didn't recognize her.
She looks like she's pretty new in terms of, like, at least not, like, she's not, this is, like, seems to be her first big thing, you know?
Yeah, I love when there's, like, new people.
Me too.
Like, breaking out. Like,
It's when you see the same people over and over again, you're like, oh, like,
it's you again.
It's you. Michelle Yeoh is awesome. She's mainly known for being in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be in Crazy Rich Asians, which I am definitely going to see in theaters. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, it's based on a book.
It is based on a book. I was just talking about it to someone this morning. Or this afternoon, rather. Doug Jones plays Saru. Or Saru, I don't know how to pronounce it. Even though they literally said it like 100 times in the episodes. But do you... Okay, so here's the thing. You have seen Doug Jones, but do you know where you have seen Doug Jones? I know you've seen him, because I know what movies he's been in.
No, I have no idea.
Okay, so Doug Jones is most... his most famous role is playing the Fawn and the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth. So the you know, okay. the creepy figure
yeah, yeah. with
the eyes in his hands and the goat-like figure? He played...
I will say, in my defense, you could I not saw see that his face. Probably 7 years ago.
Also, you did not see any parts of his face in either of those.
And I watched it in Spanish.
So
I was very distracted.
Yeah, I watched it, I think, in 12th grade English class for some reason. It was after the APs, so. So, yeah, he is known for doing a lot of, like, I guess, monster character acting. Mm-hmm. So he did Pan's Labyrinth. He's also done, he's done a couple other things. Where is it?
Well, he there must one play characters that look so much like him.
He does have a pretty... If I show you a picture of his face, he does look a little bit strange.
Okay.
Like, he has very prominent cheekbones, and his eyes are kind of sunken in a little bit. But
so this exaggerated his features.
I mean, basically. But yeah.
We're horrible people.
I think Guillermo del Toro works with him a lot, because he was also... I watched Crimson Peak a while ago, and he played some of the monsters in that film as well. So I guess, like, he's not really, I guess until recently, he hasn't really been doing so much acting, more like, I don't know, acting in a bodysuit or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess this is his big break. Anyone else? The guy who played Sarek, has been in Orphan Black, apparently.
Huh.
Ferdinand Chevalier? Does that ring a bell?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Okay. I just was trying to pick, like, stuff that you have seen before.
No, I mean, I have seen Orphan Black, but my goodness gracious, do I not know anything.
Okay.
That's what happens when you binge-watch television, children.
He's in Gotham, True Detective, Agent Carter.
Oh, Agent Carter.
He played...
Shout out.
Leet Brannis in Agent Carter. But it was only 2 episodes, so maybe he was, like, a bit character. I'm not really sure.
That sounds a bit sad.
Sleepy Hollow, Grimm, The White Queen.
Come on, that was funny.
Tron. What?
Never mind.
I totally, like, wasn't even listening. Let's see. The guy who played Takuvma hasn't really been in too much stuff. Although apparently he was in American Gods, Snow White and the Huntsman, and Ghost in the Shell. You know, those are all super great.
You can really pick them.
And I don't think we've seen him too much, but Dr. Nambu, he was in 30 Rock, Weeds, 27 Dresses, and Phineas and Ferb. So,
27 Dresses?
As Trent. He was probably, like, in the corner for, like, 2 seconds. But yeah, he was in 27 Dresses as Trent, whoever Trent is. So, looking at the cast list, those were the only people who I thought were they seemed like to be in multiple episodes and... Or, I don't know, or were important to these 2 episodes and had some kind of interesting bit roles.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy who played that pale-skinned Klingon has been in anything super, super well-known. But yeah, I know, I kind of like it when they cast more unknown or, like, newer people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying. It's because when you see the same revolving number of faces, it's too much.
Well, then, yeah, and you also get really distracted by, like, their previous roles. I know a good actor, you're not supposed to, but I still do, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we can't all be Daniel Day-Lewis, right? So, you know.
Well, that would be really terrifying, actually.
Okay, so.
Now I can only think of, like,
oh my god,
I don't know,
7
billion...
Please don't. Okay.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
So, are we going to get into this? Let's get into this. Because we've already been talking for quite some time now. So, Klingons. We talked about the Klingons already. So, back in the TOS days, they were basically a metaphor for the USSR. Obviously, Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore, but Russia still does. And are we heading back into a Cold War with Russia? Maybe.
Only if we're lucky.
So, this seems a little timely to bring back the Klingons at this exact period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. But you said you thought they perhaps stood for ISIS. Would you like to elaborate?
Just because they were talking a lot about, like...
Oh, that's Trent. Sorry, continue.
I'm trying to... I don't know if I wrote it down in my notes. There were just certain things they were throwing out there that made me go... Because I think, like, more the mention of, like, religion and belief in an afterlife and things like that. Like, it was really very Mad Maxian when they were like, die on the battlefield of glory instead of just, you know, dying in your sleep or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, this is very Mad Max-ish. At least Fury Road-ish. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to pinpoint if there's any... I think just in general, just, like, the more religious tone stuff made me go, oh, maybe this is more, like, a dig at ISIS. Because they do mention terrorism quite a bit.
They do, yeah.
The Klingon attack on the settlement that Michael was living at, or where or staying at, or wherever, that was... Sarek referred to that as terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else... I think just in general, like, me comparing how the U.S. had treated people in the Middle East, kind of, there were some parallels, like, with, like, when, is it Takuma or Takuva says, like, something like, oh, like, they don't, they just want to come in and, like, destroy our culture, they don't want to understand us, or blah, 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 and I was like, yeah, I could kind of see parallels with that, and, like, maybe how religious extremists in the Middle East might think of us, like, I don't know. That's what I thought, anyway. Obviously, it's not all
that,
one-to-one.
But I took a different approach.
What did you think of the Klingons?
I kind of thought that they were more a commentary on, like, white supremacy.
Oh, like, when they're talking about race purity and stuff?
Yeah, they're talking about race purity, and they don't want to intermingle with the other people, and they're like, you're trying to take our culture from us! Like...
That's so interesting. That works, and too. It works on so many different angles and levels.
It completely changes all of the meanings.
Yeah, that works, though.
And they also made the comment about race.
They literally talk about skin color. They talk about how that guy's an outcast because he's, like, pale-skinned or whatever. Yeah, no,
I know how that feels, bro.
He's paler than you, so...
I know, but not by a lot.
Not by a lot. But yeah, I don't know. The thing about the Klingons is every time you see them, they look different. Like, that's I don't know if it's, like, a joke, but it probably is a joke in the Star Trek fandom. Like, if you look at Klingons from the original series, they just look like a really bad Chinese stereotype. Like, you know that, like, that kind of racist Fu Manchu thing? Like, they got the racist Fu Manchu look going on in the original series. They look like people in the original series, Klingons.
That's probably because they were.
But, okay, Melissa.
No, I understand.
Yeah. They don't have, like, the forehead ridges that are present in every iteration after that.
Okay.
We look at Klingons in The Next Generation, which is came after the original series. And you have Worf, who's a main cast member. He has the forehead ridges, but he has, like, hair, so, like, he doesn't really look like the Klingons in this series. And then I think the Klingons that popped up for, like, 2 seconds in the newer Star Trek films, I don't know, did they pop up in the film? I think they did. Man, it's been a while since we talked about Star Trek Beyond. It's been more than a year, and I don't remember too many of the details.
Wow, that's crazy,
I think
actually.
Klingons popped up in that one for 2 seconds. Because I think Idris Elba's character kind of got some Klingon facial characteristics when he was doing his weird, like, power absorption thing. Mm-hmm. Klingons were in there for 2 seconds, and they definitely didn't look like the old Klingons or these Klingons. And these Klingons have another different design. I mean, really, the only thing that stays the same is, like, the forehead ridges, but people kind of just change the design whenever. Versus, like, Vulcans look the same every time.
It's basically Harry Potter continuity. Like, Harry Potter movie continuity.
Oh, with, like, people looking different film on a film. Well, yeah, basis. And like
the sets change with the directors. It's ridiculous.
The sex change with the directors? What do you mean?
Sets.
Oh, the set change. Oh. Like the castle's looking different or whatever?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the castle stays pretty much the same, but like the way the grounds look dramatically changes throughout the movie.
But it's magic, Melissa.
Okay, shut up. Oh, I just thought of something else.
Yeah.
Another reason why I thought that it was kind of like a take on white supremacist Nazism, even, because there's actually been a lot of talk recently about how, like, how do you engage with people like that? How do you engage with, like, Nazis? I felt that very similar to, like, oh, I do you see. Attack first, or you should, you know, try and communicate? And, like, there's been a lot of, like, debate, like, oh, well, punching anyone is wrong, or punching a Nazi is okay, I don't know.
Right, so Michael's in the camp of just, like, punch them, because yeah, that's just what punch those Nazis. And then the captain's Priscilla like, is like, nah,
we don't do that. We gotta talk, we gotta be better.
Yeah. So, oh, see, that's a really strong argument for that. I was still thinking of, like, Star Trek 2009 terms when I think they were more going for that terrorism angle. But yeah. No, that's really good. Like, I see that now. It totally went over my head, because I was just thinking about the Klingons of ye olden days, where they were, like, you know, they were, like, a war-like... Soviet. Ye Soviets, where they were, you know, warlike... or like a, you know, a war hungry race or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really beautiful about them is that they can hold more meanings than just one.
Yeah, we went through like just five different ones just now. Yeah. But yeah, Star Trek has always been a like social commentary kind of, at its best it's been social commentary. I mean, one of the best films, which I don't know if I agree with it being the best film, but it's definitely the silliest film.
The whale one.
Go, yeah, you know what? When they go back in time to the 80s to go save some whales. Like, what?
I want to know how that idea came, like, someone came up with that idea.
I don't know, dude.
I think there were drugs.
It's completely, it's wild. I personally did not think it was that amazing. I did think that there were some amazing gags every once in a while. I thought overall it wasn't that great, but that's just me. I mean, I still like the movie, but it's just too silly, dude. But yeah. What?
No, I'm just thinking. As one does.
Okay. So, let me try to see what other notes I have. Okay. You know.
I had a thought.
What is it? You lost it? That's
the problem.
Okay, I'll keep going then. When we first see the two women walking in the desert, and they're just like... casually walking towards a lightning storm, no big
deal.
As one does. I obviously knew that number one / Burnham / Michael, she is the Spock, obviously. I was like, is she Vulcan? Is she human? But no, she's just a human who was who lived in Vulcan culture for a really long time.
I mean, there is an interesting point about assimilation and cultural identity there.
Yeah,
but we didn't get too deep into it.
Right, I did like that. I wrote that down, how, like, race is not the same as culture and stuff.
Right.
We have a dramatic ship entrance, as one does in Star Trek.
Oh, it's so dramatic.
As one does in the newer Star Treks. I feel like a lot of Discovery, it's like, half of its DNA is from old Trek. The other half of its DNA is totally from new Trek. Like...
it's trying to blend cultures. It's a melting pot of Star Trek.
No, like there's some clearly new Trek-inspired moments and some clearly old Trek-inspired moments. Mainly, I would say new Trek.
Like, maybe that's why it feels kind of divided.
Yeah.
It doesn't know what it wants to be.
It doesn't know what it wants to be. But for me, it works. I don't know for a non-fan if it works. Let's see. Dramatic ship entrance... I was, like, kind of rolling my eyes when we cut to the wide shot and you just see that the captain walked in the shape of the Starfleet insignia. I was like, oh my god. Yeah. Like, I want to hate this, but I kind of love it.
Well, you knew that they were walking in some shape. I thought it was going to be something slightly... I guess it worked. You know, I mean, take that's it back.
I don't want to be, like, pandering to fans saying, because it kind of is... But it's like the moment when, like, anytime someone in Doctor Who goes, Doctor Who, and you're like,
yeah.
Oh, but, like, you kind of have to kind
but
of
you kind of love it. It
you kind of love it, but it's kind of like eye roll inducing at the same time.
It's more powerful when there are fewer moments like that.
Yeah, once Doctor Who does it too much, you're just like, please stop. Please stop.
Because it begins to think it's cleverer than it is.
Yeah, no.
That was a big Stephen Moffat problem. But that's another story.
Yeah. I like that the ship has a Chinese name. Just for the sheer fact that, like, a lot of times with the Star Trek universe, it just feels like everything is Mirka. And that kind of goes against what Trek is all about. If it's all about diversity and multiculturalism, like, why is everything Mirka? You know? Right. So I like that, you know, let's acknowledge that we have a Chinese name for a ship because, duh, there would be Chinese people in Starfleet considering, like, current world population. Like, I don't think it
is mostly
dramatically shift. Like, so there was a vastly less Chinese people. Let's see. I could not figure out how to spell Saru's name. I did mention the alien race stereotype thing earlier on, though. So, I know they put him, what, in the whole, he's like a prey, or he was, his people were, like, domesticated, or whatever, on his home planet. So that's kind of interesting. I kind of would like to hear more about that and learn more about that character.
I don't want him to just, that we will.
I don't want him to just be pigeonholed as, like, oh, he's, like, the cowardly science officer or whatever.
Right. It's interesting, actually. Because I remember what I was thinking about before. I did something really stupid after I finished watching the show. And I scrolled down. Just scrolled down to the comments. That was a mistake. as it is. But there were a lot of people who complained about it. About the show, about some of the characters, saying that it was, you know, social justice propaganda and that liberal
Star Trek
propaganda.
Has literally, Star Trek has always been social justice liberal propaganda. Like, it's that's literally in its DNA. Like, what are they talking about?
Yeah. And there's a lot of complaints like, oh, all of the, like, most of the characters are women and all the male characters are, like, incompetent and...
Dude, like, I'm pretty sure... the Klingon leader guy got what he wanted. I would not call that incompetent.
Like, all of the people on
the ship?
The ship. That said, I'm not saying that this troll was correct. I'm just saying this is what they said, and it was a mistake to look at it. Because I think even if, let's just say, for argument's sake, that all of the women on the show are awesome and all of the men are incompetent. Don't we deserve one show?
It's always funny when that happens, when it's like all the women are great, all the men are terrible, and people like lose their minds over it. Because like the opposite happens so much more and no one cares.
Yeah, well, you don't even notice. That's the problem. Yeah. Like if like this episode was about two main male characters with the same relationship as the captain and the first officer.
Oh, no one would bat an eye.
No one would even notice.
Yeah, especially if like Saru was like a woman or something. Like, you'd be like,
yeah, oh yeah.
Whatever. Oh, by the way, I really like the way they did the uniforms in this.
I agree.
In this episode, it was pretty subtle. Like in the traditional Trek uniform, you have your primary colors of red, yellow, and blue. So yellow is command, blue is science or medical, and red is like pretty much everything else. Well, not necessarily dead, because it depends. If you're on the main cast, you're not going to die. But red is dead / engineering and communication and other extra stuff. Red is everything else because it's extra and
it hides the blood easier.
It hides blood easier for sure. And then when they talk about rank, their insignia and rank and stuff is usually on the like near the wrist. It'll be like silver or gold stripes or dotted dotted stripes, whatever, dotted lines. I like how in this one they did it on like the side of the uniform, and they're like more like with the pants. I think that it looks more like a tracksuit where like it has like gold or silver lines going down the pants. So I like that.
I caught that.
I caught it because I was like, oh, let me look at their uniforms. Oh, they're so pretty. And they're not, like, you know, garish primary colors.
I was thinking the exact word garish.
I mean, I love you, Trek, but sometimes the primary colors are a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a perfect place to fire at. Like,
Target oh, let's aim for all the red ones. Basically. So I do like the way the uniforms were done.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like a... I wouldn't call it a reboot, redesign exactly, but it felt like it's a new era's incarnation.
Yeah. I mean, from what I gather, it's pretty much every time you redo you do a new Star Trek, you gotta change up, like, the uniform. Yeah. You gotta change up, like, a bunch of things.
All the metaphors.
The uniform changes is a pretty big thing. Like, yeah. You never have the same uniform. I mean, I guess really only, the only thing I'd say is, like, with the reboot in 2009, it was the quote-unquote same uniform, but not mm-hmm. really. Like, it was, like, a more modern version that wasn't as bright, saturated primary colors. It was a little more muted. Like, it was more of, like, a mustard yellow and, like, a darker red and, like, small a slightly miracles. Grayer, darker blue. It wasn't, like, bright pastel blue, weird mustard yellow, greenish yellow, and, like, bright red, you know? Like, yeah. The olden days.
That was the only colors they had back then.
Well, except when Kirk brought out his beautiful lime green wrap shirt. That's when you knew, like, you know, he gets a special green lime color just for being captain.
Oh, he is so special. We should put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And then so I noticed that a lot of this, I felt like, at least in the beginning, when I was looking more at the aesthetics of the show, it was filmed a lot like the 2009 film.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched, or sorry, listen, if you haven't listened to our 2009 Star Trek podcast, you should listen to it. I have a great time in that one. But yeah, this is filmed like the 2009 film. We have you have your lens flares. You have, like, just the way the camera is kind of angled on the bridge from time to time. Like, mm-hmm. it's very reminiscent of how the 2009 film looked.
And, you know, I mean, this is a TV show, but it's extremely cinematic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think partially because of the budget.
Mm, that's true.
But it really looks impressive.
Yeah. No, like, the effects and the graphics are good.
I'm like, I would not expect that. I mean,
it's no Dark Matter, yo.
Yeah, I watch a lot of science fiction fantasy shows, and my goodness, this may be the best, like, integration of, like, the fantastical that I've seen in a while.
Mm. Well, think about it this way. Star Trek, even though I guess it has, like, that kind of fuddy-duddy old kind of reputation, is still one of CBS's cash cows.
Right.
A fairly reliable cash cow, so they're gonna milk that cash cow for as much as they possibly can. So they're gonna invest in it. They're gonna, you know, have good graphics.
Well, yeah, and they also want us to invest in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why they have their little CBS digital exclusive whatever thing going on.
So, Maggie.
Yes.
Were these two episodes enough to make you say, I gotta get into this? I gotta grab myself an all-access CBS pass.
I don't know if it's enough for me to grab an all-access CBS pass. I definitely want to keep watching. How dare you? How dare you gasp? Anyway, I will definitely keep watching. I think, doesn't it also air on CBS, like, on TV?
No.
It does not.
The first episode did, but the rest of them don't.
Oh.
Which is where we start getting to the problem. I remember seeing somewhere that these episodes were some of the most pirated in recent memory.
Yeah, I read an article about that.
Maybe
they're
read
really
the same
not
going
to release it on CBS.
No, they're trying to get you to buy their platform.
See, I don't know. I think that's going to be a barrier to a lot of people too.
Yeah, like, and by barrier, I mean they're going to find other places.
Right. Like, I don't know how they think they're. I guess you could make up for it by, like, merchandise, but, like, I don't know, man. This
it
just
feels
seems like a
silly.
Bad idea. You yeah, know, back in the... Sorry, you were saying?
No, it just seems like...
It seems like a really bad idea.
Yeah, like, there should be an investment.
Sell it to Netflix or something, dude. At least you would make some money off of it.
Well, I mean, this is them trying to build their stupid CBS.
You can't build Netflix. It already exists. Like,
but I mean,
it's too late for them.
It's too late.
It is too late.
In their defense, you know, HBO has HBO Go, mm-hmm. A whole bunch of different online video have platforms their streaming exist. Things,
yeah.
That said, you can't have one show or a few shows.
Yeah.
It's a process.
I don't think that business model is going to work out for them. Especially I don't with think the whole it... pirating thing, too. Like, I don't... Yeah. I don't know who, excuse me, I don't know who made this executive decision, but it was a poor decision.
I bet that contributed to it getting such a good budget, though.
That they didn't have to broadcast it on TV?
Well, no, that they knew that they were getting a paid subscription, essentially, to make it.
Oh. I think I follow your meaning. Anyway, I don't really care. CBS can do whatever they want. I just think it's interesting that, like, I remember when the 2009 film came out, I watched it, I liked it, and then some time passed, and then I realized I really liked this, and then I decided, you know what would be best for me to do during my, while I'm taking all these high school final exams? I'm gonna binge watch Star Trek. Old Star Trek.
Oh. And you did.
So I think we were talking about... What were we talking about, Melissa?
It was many years ago. 84, in fact.
Oh my god. We talked about how it was kind of filmed, how high quality the cinema was. The cinematography was.
And whether CBS All Access Pass.
I severely doubt that's going to work out.
Weirder things have happened, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Oh yeah, what I was talking about, I got cut off, but I was talking about how when I was in high school, I would watch Star Trek, old episodes of Star Trek. I would watch old episodes of Star Trek online for free, legally, on CBS's website, because they had, I think they had almost all of them online, and you could watch them as long as you just sat through a couple ads that would play interspersed. I remember they had one for that Daisy cream cheese
sour
thing?
Cream
sour cream, yeah. Oh my god, I know. I can still hear the jingle.
Yeah,
it's that one. That's our first ad sponsor, guys.
This episode brought to you by
Casper Daisy sour cream. Blue Apron. Sorry, I had to.
Audible.
I know someone who I don't know if she still works there, but I knew someone who worked in that office for the Audible ads.
Yeah.
No joke.
That's funny.
But, yeah, they would make you sit through a couple
Squarespace.
Ads.
Squarespace. Sorry.
But it...
they would make I was late, sit, but I got
they
there.
Would, they would make you sit through a couple ads, but it wasn't that bad. I'm pretty sure that's gone now, but mm-hmm. that was actually a pretty good, that was doable. I would watch Star Trek constantly because it was online free legally, and I just had to sit through a couple ads that were not obnoxiously long. And now everything's all about that whole integrated, more insidious advertising. I'm over it. And
same.
You can't try to make Netflix when Netflix already exists. Let it go. Just let it go.
Well, I mean, it's just so annoying because the whole thing is that there was this huge movement towards diversification, and you had to start buying the diversification of channels, not actual diversity. Let's not get crazy here.
Right.
But you know, we're getting different channels, and you had to buy different packages to get all the channels. Then all of a sudden, they had all you could buy, basically most of the channels, and everyone could see everything, and it was great and beautiful. And then
what
all
are you talking
sudden,
about? Netflix? Are you talking about something else?
No, I'm getting to Netflix, but that was just mostly TV. Okay. Then, we have the online communities, and we have Netflix, and it was awesome because you could see all of your favorite shows in one place. Or all of your shows that were your favorites from last season, as the case may be.
Right.
That was a burn to you, Netflix. I know you're listening. But, as each of these companies are making their own, viewing platforms, Disney is making their own, and...
Yeah, a bunch of them already have them, HBO.
Right, exactly. I'm not going to buy them.
Yeah, listen, we can, I think people from very early on jumped on the whole pirating bandwagon, right? Like, yeah. God knows music has been pirated forever. Same thing is going to happen with, you know, TV and film. My thing with film is the experience of seeing it on a small screen versus the experience of seeing it on a big screen is much different. Mm-hmm. So, like, depending on the film, I will splurge for, you know, seeing it in a theater. But with TV, like, it's... I mean, I know people have giant TV screens or whatever, but it's not... There's nothing special mm-hmm. about TV that makes me want to shell out money for it, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, I mean, sometimes if I really want to support a show, I will watch it on TV. Like, I remember Fresh Off the Boat, I think I tried to watch as much episodes on TV as possible so they could get their ratings up and stuff. But, you know, other than that, I'm not really going to sit down at a prescribed time every week to watch a show. Because we don't need to do that anymore because we have Netflix and Hulu and that kind of a thing.
And, you know, things that can record and just...
Yeah. Basically.
It's just annoying.
And then, like, I think the thing that makes me the most upset about this model is, like, they're not even releasing it on TV. Like...
Right.
And it's not... And it'd still be kind of okay if it was only online, but you have to pay for it. Right. It's not even a model where it's like you can watch it for free the day of and then you pay for it later, which I could even accept. Cuz I know some companies do follow that model where it's free the day of or the week of, and then after that week or that day is up, then it's kind of you know, then you have to buy.
Yeah.
Or the reverse. It's not even that.
There are some companies that do the reverse as well. That's how Hulu used to be, where it was like you had to wait 8 days before like a new episode would come out.
Okay.
Which was really annoying because 8 days later you can't see the new episode, and then you still get behind and it's annoying. But that's another story. Hulu is not the devil.
There's different models that are not still not super great, but. Better than this weird model where you're releasing a full show, but you have to pay for... it's just that one service and that one show. It's not even a range of shows, right?
I don't think so. I don't want to make blanket statements, though.
Right.
I
don't know. I just find it annoying.
From what I gather, Star Trek is the only exclusively online show in CBS's repertoire.
Well, they're trying. Of course, they're going to try this out on their most popular franchise, right? They wouldn't risk this kind of thing on something that's
young Sheldon,
lower return. My God, oh CBS, what happened to you?
I don't know, but I don't watch any shows on CBS.
That's what I mean. Like the only property of theirs that I care about is Star Trek. Other than that, I don't care about Big Bang Theory or whatever other ones they have. I mean, I know they're making mad money off of Big Bang Theory, but still.
Yeah. Don't profit off of nerd culture. Thank you.
I mean, Big Bang Theory isn't even nerd culture.
I mean, it's like making fun of nerd culture.
Yeah, it's like... Anyway, let's move on from this sad topic and go back to Trek. So, what's talking about? Right, we're talking about how it looks stylistically. I really like the shot when Burnham is looking at, I think when Burnham's looking at the sun in the beginning, it looks really beautiful. Especially when she's in that, like, Pacific Rim type spacesuit. Tell me you didn't think the same thing when you saw that. It was very Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I did.
Which, by the way, guys, that was, like, one of our first episodes with Pacific Rim. So, like, check it out if you haven't listened to our Pacific Rim episode.
Maggie's in full plug mode.
Full plug mode today. But, yeah, lots of stuff that was in the same DNA, or, I don't know, about maybe directly copied from Star Trek 2009. Like, when they launch Burnham from the ship towards the quote-unquote unknown object that ends up being a Klingon beacon, she's in the spacesuit, she's breathing hard, you can hear the hard breathing, you can see her face mask fogging up, and there's lens flares everywhere. I'm like, this is literally straight out of Star Trek 2009. Because it is. Because there's a whole scene where Sulu and Kirk, you know, parachute down to the drill. Yeah. And literally the same thing happens. What else?
All these properties, not just the Star Trek ones, but all of these science fiction things kind of
meld together. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they stole the Pacific Rim suit from Pacific Rim. Like,
and Pacific Rim wants it back.
They're willing to pay. They are coming back, aren't they? I can't remember when they're coming back. But
Pacific Rim, supposedly, the new movie will be in, what, 2018, 2019? I haven't been keeping up with it, though. God, I don't know whether that's so actually old. Still true.
I feel so old, Melissa.
So many things have changed.
I know.
In 2017, you never know.
There's a lot of eye shots in this, in these two episodes. Like, they do that kind of, like, zoom out from, I keep forgetting his name. The Klingon, the guy who was, like, a martyr. What is his name? Takuvma. They do that zoom out from Takuvma's eye. It's like a galaxy, and then it zooms into a pupil, and then iris, and then a whole eye. It's the main Klingon leader, his eye. It zooms out of that. We kind of have a lot of shots of Burnham's eye. And then also we have, you know, like, later on, towards the end of the second part, Burnham attacks the paler Klingon, and she doesn't, like, gouge him in the eye. She kind of misses, but she kind of gets him underneath his eye. It's kind of the eye bag, eye socket area. So, I don't know. I guess, I don't know if it's because eyes are cool to shoot, or
eyes are what, the window to the soul.
But there's a lot of eyes in this episode, in the second episode.
One moment.
Yes.
I would like to just note, for the record, Pacific Rim Uprising is scheduled to be released March 23rd, 2018.
Starring, oh my God,
podcast favorite, John Boyega. Long time podcast favorite.
Once you enter the world of sci-fi, you can never leave. It's like Hotel California.
Yeah. Oh, there's a poster that just got released.
Ooh, let me see. When was it released?
Two days ago.
We should link to it in the show notes. Oh, perfect timing. Will. Perfect timing. Wait, hold on. Can you send me that link? I really want to look at it.
Right now?
Sure, let's do it. Let's talk about this thing that we're looking at over the podcast.
That you can't see. Podcasts are so great, aren't they?
I mean, we're going to put it in the notes, right? So, okay, it's fine. I can look at it later. I can savor Boyega's face later on. So, we have that whole... Oh, she just sent it. Okay, I'm going to look at it. I lied. I'm going to look at it right now. Is it not working? I don't think it worked.
No?
Oh, no. It's popping up, I think.
It is no. Awesome.
Whatever. It's not work. Oh, okay. I think I see it now. Why is it taking so freaking long? Okay. So, it is a black and white poster, except for some flashes of orange. John Boyega's front and center. He looks amazing.
He does.
They obviously know their target demographic and audience and how to market, because, of course, you're going to put Boyega in the middle of your poster to promote your show. You don't have Idris Elba anymore. You got to replace him with someone else. John Boyega. Uprising March,
so
in theaters, real D, 3D, and IMAX. Ooh. I wonder if it's going to pop in IMAX. Suit's basically the same. Does he have one of those fade haircuts with, like, two stripes or whatever? Anyway, looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. I wonder who his co-pilot's going to be.
It does kind of look like he has antennas coming out of his
a little bit, right?
I think it might just be from behind him.
The suit,
but
behind him, yeah.
It's just the way.
Do you think
little
it's
antenna things?
So, not. I don't know if I'm going to start a whole Zutara. What's the other one? Katang flame war. But who is John Boyega's drift partner going to be? Is it going to be Oscar Isaac or Daisy? Daisy is her name. Daisy Ridley.
Oh, you mean in
Rey
Star
or,
Wars?
Rey or what's? No, I mean. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, like, if Boyega is Finn in the Pacific Rim universe, who is his drift compatible partner?
Oh.
Sorry, that was really
convoluted.
Okay, that
was, like, the nerdiest question
it.
You've ever asked me. I would have to say his drift partner would be Poe.
Would be Poe?
Yeah. That'd be my inkling. I don't
know. Do you ship it?
I've learned my lesson from Star Wars. You never ship it until you know who's related.
That is the biggest lesson.
That is the lesson that I've learned. I remember reading other people on the internet concurring, and I was like, yes. That said, I think they would be compatible. Anyway, back to Star Trek.
We're all right. Back to Star Trek. So
now that we come back from our Pacific Rim break,
yes, I really enjoyed Michael's monologue when she's twisting around the, well, we know later that's a Klingon object, the beacon. I just love the way it was filmed. She was just twirling, and it was so graceful, and like the structure looks beautiful. It was just so good.
Yeah,
so good. Again, me getting my Star Trek 2009 feels when we see the learning pods. I was like, oh, those are the learning pods that we saw in Star Trek 2009.
I actually knew that. I was like, go me.
And, you know, they have the weird costumes. They don't have the weird little turtleneck thing that the 2009 one has, but they're still, like, in that same family of, like, weird...
You're talking about on the Vulcan planet, correct?
Yeah, so this is a flashback when Michael's kind of thinking black, dreaming back to her youth, and she's in the Vulcan pod, learning pod thing, and she's wearing a uniform, and it's not the same uniform as the one in 2009, but it's similar. Like, all the Vulcan uniforms, all the Vulcan dress that we've seen in these two episodes and the 2009 Star Trek reboot AU whatever universe, they're all very, like, geometric kind of shapes. And
that must be why I like them.
Yeah, I could tell. I was like, Melissa's gonna love that red dress thing. Like, I just know it. But yeah, they're very geometric. I kind of lost it when Sarek showed up. I was like, oh my god, it's Sarek. I love you, Sarek. The thing with Sarek, though, it's so funny, because, like, so in the original series, we do meet Spock's father, but he has an American accent. And then in the 2009 version, for some reason, he has a British accent.
Okay.
Which, like, you, like, stereotypically, that does kind of work, because I guess for most Americans, when we hear a British accent, we think, oh, they're, like, smarter. So, I guess I understand that casting choice, but now he's here back again, and he has an American accent again. So I'm like, I guess I'll just deal with this, but I still don't know. I think this is apparently supposed to take place...
What, like 10 years before?
10 years before, but then there's the whole thing about how she's in prison, right? So I don't know how long of a stretch that period of time is.
I don't think it'll be that long, honestly.
So this is supposed to be 10 years before the events of the, like, what Kirk and Spock and McCoy and company going on their mission on the USS Enterprise. Wait, so I was trying to figure out the timeline, because I'm like, so, is Spock alive? Is he a child? Is he an adult? What's happening here? Because the thing that you can't tell with Vulcans, because they look like they don't age. So it's like...
That's the dream.
They're like elves. So it's like, I don't really know how old Sarek is. I can't tell by looking at him. Yeah. So, not very helpful there. It'd be interesting to think... I wonder if they're going to bring Spock up, because everyone loves Spock. Everyone loves Spock. Two, I wonder how... Spock's existence or lack of existence, if indeed Spock hasn't been born, was born after.
That doesn't make any sense. Born after.
But I wasn't sure about the timeline when I first started watching. So I wasn't. But I'm kind of interested in seeing. At least I don't know. I'd like to see more of Sarek, because I mean it's Sarek, and just kind of figure out how raising Spock may have influenced how he dealt with Michael and trying to raise and influence her. I don't know. I that's kind of interesting to me. I don't know if they're going to explore that at all. I think Sarek's going to be more important, or he's somewhat important, because he's like the whole thing about the Katra thing. I was like, oh, like he's going to be back for sure. So anyway, Sarek shows up. Let's see. I wrote about some stuff about the Klingons. I talked about how their suits in this episode, they look very, like, Elizabethan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you caught that, too. It almost reminded me of, like, you know those, like, neck ruffles that you see William Shakespeare stereotypically wear?
Oh, I can kind of see that.
That's what their costumes reminded me of. So that really brought me back to the whole, like, this is a more, I guess, ancient, tradition-rooted...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like primitive is kind of controversial, but, like, it's an older... culture. They're not really into, like, new progressive stuff. They're traditionalists, you know? Which I think came across...
Tradition.
Yeah, it came across in their costumes, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that a lot. Anything you want to add? I feel like I've been talking
feel about the Klingon language and the use of that.
So I do not know anything about Klingon and how legit it was. I think that was a way to get some of the more invested fans super into it. I was fine with it. It didn't really bother me that much. But I don't know how you felt.
Well, actually, as I was watching it, I was also eating. So it was helpful because I was crunching. So the subtitles were nice. That said, I don't know. I don't... It bothers me more than when, like, a person speaks the real language. And if we get angry emails about saying how Klingon's real language, I'm gonna not be happy.
I don't think anyone emails us, so I don't think we're gonna get any angry emails. But maybe this will be a first. Send us your angry
emails. Mackie wants them. I don't.
I don't know if I want your angry emails. I just want emails about what shows you should watch. Anyway, you were saying had mixed feels or you had negative feels about the language.
Yeah, the language, like, I'm just gonna assume that it's legit Klingon because...
No, it's legit. There's a whole language that has been created for the show.
No, I know it's, like, there's a legit language, but, like, I'm gonna assume that they're all speaking it well.
Oh, I see.
Because I'm not going to do the research to check up on them, and I don't care.
Yeah, No.
That said, if it continues, I don't know, I find it kind of distracting. Because it does, the way it sounds is so, like, I guess it's stupid to call it foreign. But, yeah.
It's very guttural.
Yeah.
But, again, I think it adds to the otherness of the Klingons. Because we're not supposed to like them. I'm not saying that we shouldn't like them. Maybe the writers could choose to change their stance. But we are not supposed to like them. They're supposed to be other. That's why they chose to make them even more other by using a different language, I think, is what their reasoning. I mainly think their reasoning was they want to get the dragon, the hardcore fans.
Yeah. But then, you know, we talked about this before, too, but the whole message is, like, togetherness and
kumbaya. Well, that's sensei, girl. That's sensei. Like,
no, but, like, that's what, like, Star Trek is about, like, you know, being, embracing diversity and whatever.
Yeah, and I think infinite diversity and infinite combinations is one of their kind of weird sort of slogan phrases. That's more of like a Vulcan phrase, which is also kind of hypocritical because of how people treat Spock, or how characters treat Spock. But anyway, I don't know. I feel like I need to do some more digging on how Star Trek approaches and deals with multiculturalism based on what I've remembered. Like, the Federation's all about that, but Klingons are not.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So
if anyone is against progress, we kill them.
Well, that's called other hardcore sci-fi shows that are much more hardcore than Star Trek. I can think of a couple at the top of my head where it's like progress at the expense of humanity or whatever. There's definitely a couple that are like that. But I don't think Star Trek is one of them.
No. Or at least it's not. Star Trek is not.
Star Trek, at its heart and at its origin, was not ever meant to be super dark and gritty.
Right.
Tackling difficult issues, yes. Dark and gritty, no.
This episode did feel kind of dark.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit dark and gritty. I don't think it ever delved into, like, crazy levels of darkness, but it could have. It could have been a little bit more lighthearted if you really want to get that Trek vibe.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness or anything. Oh, but...
no. Well, you haven't seen that, so...
Well, no, but... I went for the joke, but yeah. I just...
Oh, it also was... They were trying so hard to be super dark and gritty in that film. Oh, my gosh. Let's see. I wrote down that Valk, the paler Klingon, is super metal, because he just, like... put his hand in a fire prove a point. And I was like, oh my god, this guy.
I like him.
I'm and I also made a correlation between, I really want to see more of, like, Valk versus Michael.
Because
they're both parentless, right?
Yeah, they're interesting. So that's foil,
really interesting. That could lead to some very interesting foils.
Yeah.
So I want to see more. And they're also, like, they were a second in command to someone. Now they're both not a second in command to someone. Like, I don't know. This could be really interesting to see how they relate to each other.
Yeah, it could be played really well.
I'm interested in seeing more of that.
So you are going to continue watching?
I think I will, yeah. I was super into it. Once I finished those two episodes, I was like, wow, I have to keep going with this series.
Do you know the airing schedule?
It's supposed to be Sunday nights, I believe.
At what 8:30. Is the point?
Right?
Of having an airing time if it goes online.
Or at least maybe it's like the release time or something. I don't know, man. I don't know anymore.
You're trying to be Netflix without releasing all the episodes at once.
Basically. And then let's see, what else do I have? We talked briefly about the race versus culture thing. I talked about the whole Cold War thing. I really enjoy Saru's like design, like the way they designed that alien's face.
Yeah, he does look really,
I really
cool.
Dig it. He looks super cool. I always feel like that's, I guess Star Wars has its moments of this too, but I really like the way aliens are designed in the newer mm-hmm. versions of Star Trek. Like, I still remember, you know, Crab Head Lady from Star Trek Beyond, and what's her face? What's her name? Gila or something?
Yeah. Like, wow, you pulled that out. I'm impressed.
I know something with J. Oh no, it was Jayla. It's Jayla, not Gila. I screwed it up. But Jayla had those
I didn't know.
That was like four black lines going down her face. Like, and then, you know, I feel like the newer Star Trek alien designs are pretty standout. So I like how his is also fairly good quality as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, they're more able to do that.
Right. Like, this isn't 1966 technology where they only have, like, a piece of putty. Like,
yeah.
They can, and some, like, face paint. Like, they can go a little bit farther.
You have $5.
It's like some, you know, there's like a monster makeup reality series.
I've seen commercials for it.
I used to watch it a lot. I don't watch it as much, but
is it Face Off?
I think it's called Face Off. Yeah, that's pretty fun. All right, so we talked about race.
Oh,
culture.
There's no point there.
I mean, I didn't want to go on a whole tangent about Face Off and how much I like the show, because it's this pod is gonna get, it's very long already. Alright, so I love the, again, talking about effects, we were talking about the graphics and digital effects. I love when we first talk to Sarek via the hologram, how he like jumps around.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
It happened multiple times in the episode, actually.
I loved it.
In the two episodes. But it was so
real. Well, the first time it happened was very like whoa. Like,
yeah.
when he starts walking, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Then he, like, kind of almost, like, teleports over to where she's sitting. And that was so cool. I love that so much. Cool.
It felt very real.
Yeah, it felt real. It felt natural. But I was like, oh, he's a hologram. Oh, my gosh. This is so cool. I wrote down one of... Is this one of the captain's lines? Battle is not assimilation. That's almost definitely a Borg shout-out to the TNG series. That almost definitely is what that's referencing. But battle is not assimilation.
Wait. Okay.
So, I believe this comes from the scene where the captain is chastising Michael and saying that battle isn't assimilation. I think that's where it came from, but I'm not sure.
Do you mean simulation or, like, assimilation?
Assimilation, like cultural assimilation.
Oh, okay, got it.
Battle is not assimilation.
Okay.
In the TNG 1980s Star Trek, they're one of the most popular, highly regarded episodes is a two-parter. I think it's called Best of Both Worlds, but I could be messing it up.
Is it about Miley Cyrus?
It is not about Miley Cyrus.
Darn it.
It is about this evil, I guess... They're assimilators. That's like their whole thing.
Yeah.
Alien race called the Borg, and they just assimilate other races, and you know, kind of strip them of their individuality, and they just conquer everything.
It's like an anti-melting pot.
Yeah, it's like an anti-milsim. Well, yeah. So, pretty sure that's what they... When they say battle is not a simulation, that's just like a shout-out to the TNG fans. I was surprised when Michael pulled out the Vulcan nerve pinch and used it on the captain. But I was also like, dang, she is...
She went there.
She went there. And she is not holding back.
It was... I found a lot of that piece of the episode very frustrating because you knew as viewers that she was right.
Right.
And no one believed her, and most of that was sequence was just frustration.
Delaying the inevitable.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I was also thinking, it's been a while since I've seen the pilot episodes of the original series Star Trek, but part of me wants to say that this two-parter mirrors the original two-part pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also some kind of thing going on with a captain, a first officer who is Spock, some talk about, oh, you should be in a higher leadership position, and betrayal and mutiny and stuff. These two episodes have some similarities to the Menagerie. I can't remember if it mirrors the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely similar stuff happening. Because with the pilot episode of Star Trek, I want to say there were two pilots, but one of the pilots is a two-parter called The
Menagerie. One of them was Kirk.
You wish. But there was a whole thing. Well... Okay, I'm definitely getting mixed up, so I'm not going to go forward anymore because I don't remember it clearly. I'll look it up later, and if we ever talk about Star Trek Discovery again, I'll bring it up. But I'm pretty sure there's some parts from the original pilot that are kind of mirrored or referenced in this episode. Let's see. What did I write down here?
That's an interesting conundrum. Oh, Burnham.
Burnham is Sarek's ward. That's just
what you think to myself. Of the Admiral character.
I feel like that's like typical Starfleet Admiral, is like they sit on their butts, they don't do anything, and they kind of just order stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't surprised. I was like, yeah, that's your typical Admiral for you. What I did kind of like was how they kind of used it with the Klingons. Like, they were, like, waiting to, I guess, speak to someone of...
Yeah.
I guess, value or status. So yeah. They were like, oh, they're finally going to let us talk to an admiral. But, I mean, they still disregarded what he said. But, you know, like, I don't know. Again, it points more towards, like, that whole traditional Klingon view and hierarchy and stuff. So,
that let me speak to a man.
I don't even speak to a man. It's like, let me speak to a higher up. Because I don't think they were inherently sexist or anything.
Are there any female Klingons?
You mean in existence? Yes. I think... Wasn't, in the show. I don't know if one of them was supposed to read as female, but one of them read as female to me.
Oh.
But I wasn't sure. Because they're fairly androgynous from what I can tell. But I don't think the Klingons in this two-parter were inherently sexist.
No. I was joshing with you. I guess I brought up the Admiral because he's felt so beautifully bureaucratic. I just love moments that really remind me about real life.
I know, right? You're like, it's just that boss who just takes credit for everything and just doesn't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Not that I would ever know about that. I work at the greatest place.
So most of my notes were about part one. Now I have some notes about part two. Is there anything else about part one that you want to discuss, Melissa?
No.
Okay. So part two, I think the first note I wrote down was when we get that little flashback of Sarek introducing the captain to Michael, and Michael is in super duper Vulcan mode at this point because that's the culture she's been in for quite some time now. And I love how Sarek is just like, behave, and then just leaves. Like,
oh my god. Play nice.
I love Sarek.
It was really hypocritical, though, honestly. Because.
Yeah.
Like, she spent her whole life trying to become more Vulcan-esque. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's telling her, but, like, chill. Don't.
But was the goal for her to become more Vulcan?
That, I feel like, again, we don't know that much of her motivations, but I feel like she wanted to please him.
Yeah.
And maybe he never had a conversation where he sat down and was like, you're going to be a Vulcan now, child.
I think the thing with Sarek that we've always known, whether you've seen the movies or not, he does say it in this, in these episodes too, like, logic is, like, number one. Logic is bae.
Yeah.
That's the episode title. Logic is bae.
Yeah.
Really is, though. Like, that's, logic, that's his thing. OTP. He's like, he does tell her that when she's in the pod, when she's younger, more emotional, she's crying about the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, you're giving into emotion. You know, logic is the way to not feel so upset or whatever. Like, that's kind of Sarek's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you want to believe that the 2009 film is connected to this universe, we have that whole same discussion with Spock being like, you know, I'm half human, but, like, you want me to follow logic and blah 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 angst. So, like, Sarek has, like, a similar reaction where he's like, logic is bae. So, I guess, like, yeah, he can be a bit hypocritical, I think.
Because he was, like, pushing her towards logic. And then I feel like she was very, like, Vulcan-esque on the ship, even when she was kind of abrupt when she met the captain.
Yeah. I mean, chill. The thing I know about Sarek that made that interaction make sense to me is Sarek is a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in his nature to be like, hey, chill. Get along with other people and chill, because that's his job. Because
that's the most logical thing you can think of.
I don't know about that, but
does he do it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're getting too deep now.
Here's the thing about Vulcans. My brain hurts. I think in general, the concept of Vulcans is very, like, they're...
It doesn't make sense, yes.
It doesn't make sense, and Vulcan society is hypocritical. It is.
Yeah.
Because they're deeply emotional people who have to suppress every who feel a cultural need to suppress every emotion. That sounds kind of unhealthy to me.
Only a little bit, though.
That's their thing. Let's see. Oh yeah,
all my emotions, and it hasn't hurt me so far.
You don't suppress all your emotions. You'd make for a very podcast co-host if that was the case.
What are you talking about?
Takuvma, I wrote down his line. They come to destroy our individuality. I wrote that down, and that's what he said. We talked about that concept a little bit earlier on in the show, but I don't know, it worked for me. Liked how they reused the Into Darkness brig. So, in the second new Star Trek movie with Benedict Cumberbatch, they throw his character into the brig. If you don't know what a brig is, it's like a prison, holding cell, whatever, on a ship. And that brig is the same brig that they threw Michael in. I was like, oh, hi there again. That's what I mean. Like, they're just reusing set pieces from, like, the newer Star Trek films. I did write down the whole terrorism thing that Sarek mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I liked... slightly out of order, but speaking of the brig, I liked the sequence where, like, Michael had to get out and she was trying to reason with the computer.
That was so Vulcan.
It felt like interesting because you really were rooting for her, and you really wanted her to outthink a computer, sort of.
Yeah, because right, she's a prisoner. She can't. How can she, like, escape? But I guess someone else thought about that. Like, what happens if there's someone in the brig and they're actually in danger of dying, so they do let them escape in that sense. That's interesting, though. I wonder if they'll bring that back. I wonder if a villain can use that to their advantage to escape.
Maybe. I don't know. The computer had to be really well thought into it, though.
Yeah.
Even though, to our eyes, it clearly... death was coming, child.
Death is coming. I love the scene where Sarek shows up yet again and does this little Katra soul communication thing over galaxies, miles, whatever, billion
light
miles.
Years. Like,
it looked so... Dude, that scene was beautiful. The way they were shot in all those blues and greens and stuff. So cool. I really like that. I don't know how I feel about him kind of injecting part of his soul into a child's soul. That's a little odd to me. But, you know, other than that.
Yeah, it depends on what direction they take that in.
I don't know for sure.
It's kind of like a life force.
It was like, I would say, I think it was more of like a life force thing because she was on the brink of death, so he gave some of his life force away.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we were supposed to interpret that as.
But I don't know, does that make her part Vulcan now, or no?
No, it's just part of her soul, part of his soul resides in her.
So she has a part of Vulcan inside of her?
I don't think so. I don't think that's how that works. I don't remember exactly how the whole Katra thing works in lore, but if I remember correctly, like, after a Vulcan dies, their Katra soul thing can, I guess, be absorbed or passed down to other Vulcans, but that doesn't make them that person. It just means they have their knowledge or skills or something. I don't know about skills, but they have their knowledge, I think.
Okay.
I think that's how that works, but it's been a while since I read up on the whole lore surrounding that, so I might be wrong. But what I'm saying is, I'm pretty sure, like, a human can have have a Vulcan's Katra or have possession of it or whatever, but it doesn't change them into a Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
That just means they have, like, the possession of that soul or something. Again, I'm not too clear on how the rules are for that, because it's been a while.
And I just want to clarify, every single time you say lore, I don't think of Lord. I know, I'm sure you were wondering that, and I definitely don't have royals in my head right now.
Oh my god, Melissa.
I've never seen a diamond.
You stop that. You stop that right now. sorry, so, just a continuity issue. It's possible that he just slipped away to, I don't know. I think the captain did command him to carry out some orders, but in that scene where Michael escapes the brig and confronts the captain about what's about to go down, I was like, did Saru just randomly disappear, or was he ordered to go out of the room and do something? Because it just, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
It cuts to them having a very intense discussion, and I'm like, wait, wasn't Saru just there? But apparently not. Because later on, the captain, like, calls him over to the comms, the communication unit, or whatever. And so, clearly he's not in the room anymore, but I was like, when did this happen? I talked about the whole Mad Max thing.
Yeah, it definitely gave that kind of vibe at some points. The Klingons.
Sneaking onto the Klingon ship was very reminiscent of the 2009 film. That's straight out of the playbook, because they do that too. They sneak onto the enemy ship in the 2009 film.
Mm-hmm.
When
the captain dies and she is hovering over the body, I was like, I feel like I've seen this before. I can't think of where.
A captain also dies at the very beginning of Star Trek 2009.
But just the way that it was, you know, being drawn away, being transported away as a parental figure dies next to you.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Straight out, Spock and his mom. Yep. Just like that. I totally forgot, but yeah, no, that's straight out of the 2009 playbook. What else? When Michael is at her court-martial, when they're like, so you're being charged on all these different counts, like mutiny, attacking a senior officer, assaulting a senior officer, blah blah blah, the list goes on. I don't know why they decided to just have everyone's face in shadow. I mean, it looked cool, but it didn't make any sense.
Well, here is kind of what I was thinking. Uh-huh. It's intentionally done in Starfleet, so it's like,
oh, I see. It's
like the judgment is by the faceless, like, corporation, not corporation, but you know what, like the organization.
Right.
Instead of being like these three individual people.
Right. It's like, okay, I see. Still weird though. Because it's made them look super evil.
Yeah.
But
maybe that was intentional. I don't know. I feel like perhaps. There's a Twilight Zone episode that was similar to that, but I can't think of the details. Well, I mean, not it's not about that. It just has that right. same feature. And I think they were evil, so.
Yeah, I don't think. As of right now, I don't know if they if the series has ever gone into the whole maybe Starfleet is not all that it seems kind of road. I don't think it's really traveled that road, or if it has, it hasn't really gone down that far.
Because it could definitely play into that manifest destiny, like.
Sure.
They could definitely play that card. I don't think they will, but they could.
I mean, I don't really want them to, because we don't really need a dark and grittier version of Star Trek. Like, that's like every other sci-fi show.
We don't need
dark and gritty Star Trek. But yeah, the Shadow
Star Trek fundamentally represents what's going on, you know, in the current times, in the times that the show is being made.
Yeah, we talked about that, yeah.
And so I feel like it's kind of a grim time, and I feel like people are very hopeless. So
yeah,
I'm not sure I want it to go in that direction.
I mean, I'm not saying it needs to be like, you know,
well, yeah, rainbows
and unicorns, daisies, etc. Like, but we already have enough grim darkness as it is. Like,
I mean, like, obviously it was like grim dark in like the 1960s too. I'm not gonna.
Oh yeah, the 60s were a tumultuous time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I feel like people today are significantly more cynical.
That's true. on that happy note. I was also my final note would be that with Michael, the fact that her name is Michael keeps throwing me. Same. But I kind of like that she has a like traditionally masculine name.
Yeah.
But it keeps throwing me because I'm just like,
I keep on
what are gender pronouns?
Yeah.
So Michael is kind of like the Franz Ferdinand. Or
oh my god,
in this, like, because I don't know, in the coming up next section after the episode was done, they were talking about how like people kind of blame her for kind of being the start of this war, and I was like, she's a Franz Ferdinand, but she didn't die,
yeah,
only her soul did, kind of, but
which is so annoying, like from her perspective, I imagine, because she was the one who tried to stop it, but
yeah, she wanted to prevent war,
you know. Life is complicated, and sometimes you're Franz Ferdinand, and you just want a sandwich, and sometimes it sparks World War One. I mean, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do? Sometimes it just happens. But yeah, I enjoyed these two episodes because I'm a fan, and I definitely want to keep watching. I don't know if this merits us doing more episodes. I would always be down to do more episodes. It just kind of depends on you, Melissa. And we could talk about this off pod if you would like. But I'm super into it.
I think I'll probably watch a few more episodes and see what I think about it.
Okay.
I'm not completely sold on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems promising so far. And I think that the direction, now that they've given me the hook. It makes me want to continue watching. I just think that the hook should have come earlier. That's okay. Just me.
That's fair. Again, like, they know this is TV. They have a longer time span, so they can afford to be a little bit more generous with the time. You know, like, Star Trek 2009, you gotta cram all that emotional backstory in, like, the first 10 minutes. Like, let's, you know, kill the captain and the father and blow the ship up. Let's do all the things. So our hero can have a tragic backstory. You know what I mean? Like,
you have more time. I agree. But I just actually was thinking about Dark Matter, because their big hook comes at the end of episode 2 as well.
Mm.
So, maybe it's a science fiction thing. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, I think it depends. I'm trying to think about Doctor Who. I think Doctor Who, generally, they'll just try to hook you in with the new Doctor after the first episode. So that's not really... They don't really operate on that principle. But yeah, I guess we'll probably do, maybe we'll do like at least one more
Yeah.
Star Trek Discovery episode, we'll see based on how we can like
find
it, if
them.
Can, if we'll can if we can discover them.
That's too on the nose, Maggie.
To do it.
You made it not funny.
Please, you've been making the worst puns this episode. Okay, so if we find more Discovery episodes, and if Melissa keeps liking them, then we might continue covering them. Hey man, this is the rule of the pod. I told you I wasn't into Dark Matter. We stopped doing Dark Matter. You kept watching. It's the rule of the pod.
Dark Matter is a brilliant show. And the season, I just finished season 3 and it's so good. Oh.
You should listen to our Dark Matter episode as well. You should listen to all of our old episodes, guys.
Except
they're
for the
all,
bad ones. Don't
they're all
to
great.
Those.
Yeah, if you start hearing a lot of crazy background noises, it's time to move on to a new episode.
We have grown so much since then.
We have. Now, we've grown from recording to recording in closets.
Speak
what
for
can
yourself.
I say? So, I think we're going to keep rotating between Sense8 and Into the Badlands. But if you have any movies or, I don't know, I guess I don't know. This was supposed to be our quote-unquote movie episode. And, like, in terms of length, it kind of was. But it's been a long time since we've done a true movie. So,
yeah.
If you guys have any suggestions for any sci-fi movies that feature actors, directors, or writers of color, let us know. And we will gladly cover them for you. I know we had someone suggest Dark Matter to us, and we covered it. We only covered the first two episodes, but we did cover it. At least with it, when it comes to a movie, you know we're going to cover the full thing. So let us know what movies you want us to watch. You can hit us up on Facebook, Tumblr, or Twitter, or our email, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.